Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just in Time Sports Podcast. I am your host, Justin Jackson, and this week's episode we'll be discussing the WNBA as it makes its return from the Olympic break. We'll be talking about the NFL as we are barreling towards week three of the preseason. We will touch on college football as week zero is returning. Our college football is back with week zero. And we will always, as always, we will have our best for last. Now, don't forget to follow us on all social medias at JTime Sports. I repeat, at JTime Sports. Follow all of your favorite social medias, Twitter and Facebook, Instagram, The Stunt, Threads. We are everywhere. And as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just in Time Sports Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. Now, as always, don't forget to sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just in Time Sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is Just in Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform. We growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts. We create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from. I can't replace it. Some people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Ryder, I'm Jason. ESPN, better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just in Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake.
Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you.
This is Just in Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it.
He gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back into the Just in Time Sports Podcast, the audio version. The podcast version, not the YouTube show, which you definitely should subscribe to as well. We'll link the YouTube show in the description. But welcome into the Just in Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner, your host, your CEO, your proprietor, Justin Jackson. And I am so excited to be back with you guys. My apologies for not having a show last week. I started a new schedule and it was a little bit off. Picked up a lot of activity. So as you guys know, I coach high school football. For those of you who are one of my listeners, I'm also now coaching youth football. I'm also doing some other business stuff, trying to grow this platform, trying to grow the family. And so kind of picked up all of it at one time last week. And so kind of getting a handle on my schedule. And so I'm back with you guys weekly. So expect the show every week. Expect the YouTube show as well. We're having little production issues with last week's episode, which is why it hasn't been out yet. You know, normally you guys would get the audio show Tuesday and get the YouTube show Thursday or Friday. But like I said, we're having little production issues. Just some minor tweaks and stuff that we're getting altered and fixed. Want to make sure you guys have the best product. But the YouTube show will be back this week. So as always, this show is brought to you by IMS Productions. Make sure you guys follow them at IMS Productions 2023 on Instagram. Reach out to them for any of your production needs. I know we talked about we have production issues, so maybe plugging them at that point wasn't the best, but it's also not their fault while we're going through the production issues. It was some stuff on my end. They're trying to make sure we have the best product out to you guys, so they are always working on that. But let's jump right into the show. Let's jump right into it, baby. The WNBA is back, right? We're coming off the Olympic Games. We're coming off a strong showing of women's basketball at the Olympic Games. And we got the final we needed, right? I mean, the USA won, but it also wasn't a cruise. You know, they've won Olympic Games rather recently of average margin of victory, 20-something points. Where they just absolutely destroy everybody. They dominate the field. There's no real competition. And they, like I said, they walk to a 20-something point per game victory. And that just did not happen this time. Shout out France. They came to play. At no point did I feel like the USA was going to cruise through the tournament. They dominated Japan, but Japan was just too small. When you get to a France and you get to a player like Gabby Williams, and France had multiple top players on their team with the WNBA experience, it was impressive, right? And I enjoyed it. And people were talking about Gabby Williams used to be an American track and field person in her youth, and then she ended up playing basketball for France. Now, I know that's easier to change federations and nationalities. Like, I know it's a problem. Like, if she would have basketball in America and then she wanted to go basketball in France, that would have been a little bit harder. But she went from track and field federation to FIBA. So that's a little bit different. It's a little bit easier to transition countries whenever you're changing federations. So, like I said, going from track and field to basketball makes it a little bit easier to transition. But we were already coming off a historic WNBA season, and it was propelled forward following a historic college basketball season. We got the crop we were looking for. So, ironically, this crop is the same crop that ushered in the new wave of college basketball. So, Paige Beckers, Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, Rekia Jackson, and it was another one, Camila Cardoza. They were all one high school class. They all came out of the same class, I believe, of 2020. They all were the same high school class together. So now they all enter, and, you know, Caitlin goes to Iowa, Paige goes to UConn, Angel goes to Maryland, Rekia goes to Tennessee, and Camila goes to South Carolina. The only person to change for her schools ends up being Angel, ends up at LSU. But they are the class that ushers in the new wave of college basketball. Why? That new wave is spearheaded from Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, and Camila Cardoza's three teams. Paige Beckers, of course. Now you get it more with the Juju Watkins of the world. Kiki, that also is at USC now. You get more of those top talents. You have so many of those top talents with personalities, with people that want to see them play. And so now that famous draft class, or that famous high school class, rather, of 2019, is now in the WNBA. Yeah, because you come in 19, you finish 2023. That class 2019 is now in the WNBA, minus Paige Beckers. Paige is probably in the WNBA had she not torn her ACL. But she popped her ACL, missing her junior year, so she wants to play four years, so she's coming back. But Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, Rekia Jackson, Camila Cardoza spearhead this rookie class. And Cameron Brink is also in their high school class. I kept saying Rekia Jackson, but Cameron Brink is also in their high school class. So using that launch and that propel forward into the WNBA season, you're getting historic rating. The Indiana Fever is selling like the Indiana Pacers. I mean, it's absolutely historic. You get the Chicago Sky, they're setting attendance records. Of course, the Aces are going to do what they do, sell out arenas all over the country. The Atlanta Dream, before they fell off the face of the earth, they were setting attendance records. Like, you're getting mass attendance records that you did not see before, that you did not think was possible. You get a fully chartered flight season. I mean, I think the first couple of weeks, they were still using commercial flights, and then after the first couple of weeks, everybody flew private, flew chartered, which is huge. You know, you get your own plane, there's 15, you know, the staff, if you bring the whole coaching staff, is probably about five or six, three trainers is three, 12 players. In a 747, there's, you know, in a special 747, a chartered 747, there's probably 30 seats, you fill 22 of them. And you're flying from city to city. You don't have to wait on a tarmac. You don't have to wait on a commercial flight. You're not jammed against the window. You're not trying to book your seats together just so you're able to kind of keep some kind of continuity. You're flying chartered. You're getting on a plane. You're sitting back. You're going to your next city. And I think we're seeing that a lot with the product of the WNBA improving. But I don't want to go too far into that. But we're seeing a lot of the WNBA product improving because of the fact that they're not having to deal with these commercial issues. You're not having to deal with the fact that Oh, we played in Vegas on Friday night. We got a back-to-back, which is wild. We got a back-to-back in Chicago on Saturday night. We had, our flight was late. We couldn't, our seats were messed up. We had to get delayed. We didn't even take off to Vegas at 4 a.m. You know, so you have all these weird problems. When the game's over, your charter's sitting there. You get off the game in Las Vegas, you shower, you get on, you get into some sweatsuits, you get on the flight to Chicago, you land, the game ends at 10. You probably land, you probably take off about 10:45, 11, land for about 1, you're in your hotel room for like 1:30, and you don't have morning shoot around. As opposed to you're dealing with a commercial flight, you either get the red eye flight that might not lead to midnight, or you know what I'm saying? It's just you were dealing with so many problems. And the WNBA was doing stuff like they were, you know, chartering that back to back chain city flight for that reason. But flight problems happen all over the place. Anyway, you know what I'm saying? You were having struggles. I think that's why the product is better. You're seeing a lot of that. A road team is playing well because they're not having to deal with the problems of old. But anyway, you parlay an amazing first half of the season into the Olympic break. Now you got all of our stars together. Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, I'm sure they'll help lead the 2028 team, along with the Breanna Stewart, Asia Wilson, Juju Watkins probably is there, Paige Beckers. They'll help lead the 2028 team. But it was kind of a run of Diana Taurasi's last run. This was Brittany Griner's last run. This was, there was somebody, I think Chelsea Gray's last run in the Olympics. And you get these teams, Diana Taurasi going for her 6th straight gold medal in basketball record in the Olympics. And you just get this great moment where the world is watching. The countries watch the Olympics. The countries watch the WNBA at a roaring pace. I've got people who hated the WNBA, couldn't stand the WNBA. Now we're talking about they'd rather watch the WNBA than the NBA. Like, watching the W transcend to the Olympics, and our stars showed out. Asian Breanna Stewart showed out. And it gets down to a gold medal game, but they are a challenge. They are down like 11 or at one point, and it's like, oh my God, they might lose. And there are Gabby Williams sliding her foot back another 3 inches away from going to overtime. So now you come out of the Olympic break. You get the gold medal. You fight. You show the world women's basketball is amazing. Now you go into the Olympic break, and you are back. And history is already being made. So Caitlin Clark, congratulations to her. She breaks the rookie record for assists with her 226th assist she had in her last game. And she had a couple more after that. She'll push the record probably to where nobody gets it for a lovely while. Now, she had previously broken the turnover record for the league before the Olympic break. She now gets the rookie assist record right after the Olympic break. And that break could have been huge for her in regards to she got 2 weeks off. Because if you look at it, the schedule for a college star is wild. So like she was in the national championship game in April. She gets drafted in May. I mean, early April, she's playing in that championship game. She gets drafted in late April, early May. She's playing in the WNBA preseason in late May. So she goes from college to pros in a month and a half. Like, if you think about the male schedule, they go, even they finish in April. They don't, I mean, summer league is like in the middle of June, which is effectively older college. And then they don't play a real game until like September, October. Like, that's a massive gap in terms of what you are able to rest and recover. And, you know, Caitlin's pulling all kind of different ways. So was the stars like Carmelo Cardoza and Angel Reese. They were pulled in 1,000 different directions in that 6 week gap that is just not normal for a pro athlete. And so, but Caitlin continues to make history. She looks great. She looks like, man, those 2 weeks off was like a rejuvenation moment because she is just flicking the ball all over where she's spinning through the lane. She's knocking down shots. It looked like she was finally able to just, for like 2 weeks, the basketball world, the women's basketball world was not focused on her or something related to her. For the first time in probably at least a year, probably two, the women's basketball world was not solely, primarily focused on her. She was able to duck down. Nobody cared. Everybody was watching the Olympics. She was able to just relax, spend time with her family, I'm sure, and just kind of take a mental break. for the first time in a long time. And then speaking of rookies making history, Angel Reese went 19 points, 20 rebounds on 50% shooting. It's the first, one of the first of its stat line, if not the first of its stat line, as she breaks the Chicago Sky team offensive rebounding record. So her propensity, her talent, her ability to offense rebound, even off others' misses, as the stupid stereotype is that she only rebounds off her own misses. She shoots so bad, I hope she gets rebounds. Like, no. Does she have poor shot selection? Yes. Does she need more things in her bag? Yes. Does she need better touch through contact? Yes. But to, if you took all her offense rebounds off her own misses out and you did it to everybody else, she's still the best rebounder. So it's a stupid narrative, but she had a great game. They lost. I think the Sky are looking at draft position. They definitely lost to the Phoenix Mercury for the, I think the second time as many games. But she had a great night overall. But there is one thing. That Paris did not change. Not even a little bit. Paris did not change the fact that Asia Wilson is still ridiculous. In her last game, which was last night, I'm recording this on Monday night, so Sunday evening, afternoon, night, she goes 34 points, 13 rebounds on 60% shooting, and all but locks Vegas into the playoffs. Now, mathematically, they are not officially locked. However, they're effectively locked into the playoffs. She's the best player in the world. She has a legitimate case for Defensive Player of the Year. She's run away and hid with the MVP already. She has a legitimate case for Defensive Player of the Year as well. They may give it to Breonna Stewart. Breonna Stewart's had a good year on defense. But Asia Wilson, like I said, has a legitimate case for DPOY. She is the league's MVP. She's going to be first team all W. First team all defense. First team all W, all defense. Like, she is absolutely ridiculous in terms of her ability on both ends of court. The preseason poll was incredibly accurate, where they listed her as the best defensive player, the best offensive player, and the best total player. She is the standard in the WNBA. She's the first WNBA player to ever be rated 99 overall in NBA 2K. Like, she is the standard in the W, and she's continuing to show it every single night she's on the floor. Congratulations in order to the New York Liberty as they clinch they officially, mathematically, lock up their playoff spot. So they could lose every game the rest of the year, and they cannot fall out of the playoffs. They could fall in their seeding, but they cannot fall out of the playoffs. So congratulations to the New York Liberty for being the first team to clinch. Speaking of those standings, we're gonna go through them really quickly. You have the New York Liberty, followed by the Connecticut Sun, then the Minnesota Lynx, who won the Commissioner's Cup, the Las Vegas Aces, the Seattle Storm, that's a hell of a first-round matchup, Phoenix Mercury, Indiana Fever, led by Keelan Clark, Chicago Sky, are still in, led by their rookie Twin Towers, Camilla Cardoza and Angel Reese. They are the last seed in the playoff currently, so they would get the Liberty in the first round. If it ends today, it'll be in New York, Chicago, Connecticut, Indiana, Minnesota, Phoenix, and then Vegas and Seattle. And your 9 seed, a game and a half out of the playoffs, is Atlanta. Dallas Wings, 4.5 out of the playoffs. And 10th and 11th, the Los Angeles Sparks, 5 games out. And the Washington Mystics are also 5 games out of the playoffs as it sits right now. So we have an exciting few games left. It's about 14-ish games for most people left in the regular season. 12 to 14-ish games left in the regular season. In our WNBA season, that will be barreling into the playoffs. But up next, we'll be talking about the NFL. What's going on there? Welcome back into the show. Now we're going to jump to the NFL. Discuss what's going on. Discuss what's going down with the preseason. And we have some news coming out. Had some opinions to talk about. Got some complaining to talk about. A lot of things going on with the Shield. We're going to start off with the rookie class. So, as you guys know, the NFL went 1-2-3 in the draft with quarterbacks Caleb Williams, went to the Chicago Bears from the Carolina Panthers pick. So, Carolina, you could have did nothing and ended up with Caleb Williams and a whole lot of other stuff like DJ Moore and some other stuff that they could have had, but that's neither here nor there. Jaden Daniels goes to the Washington Commanders, and then Drake May goes to the New England Patriots. So quarterbacks went 1, 2, 3. One of the rare times, I think it's only like 4 or 5 times since 1977 in the modern draft era that's happened. And Daniels and Williams was announced almost on draft night. He's QB1. Jaden Daniels was officially announced today, being Monday, that he was QB1. Drake May, however, is still waiting in New England. Ultimately, I think Drake May should be the QB1. And it kind of depends on your school of thought. Some people, I'm going to take this from two different angles and two different points. So my first angle is going to be, hey, if it's close, what do you do if it's close? If it's close, one school of thought is go with the vet. The other school of thought is if it's close, go with the rookie. I'm a proponent of go with the younger player. If it's close, go with the younger player or the more physically gifted player or athletically gifted player. If it's close, if it comes down to where it looks a lot alike and it's very similar number wise and production's about the same, go with the more athletically gifted or younger player. It's just my school of thought. The other school of thought is, what do you do about rookie quarterbacks in general? Some say throw them in the fire. Some say let them learn. Let them watch and learn. I am a proponent of two things on this. Okay? For those of you who say automatically let them watch and learn, it is what it is. But if you're in the throw them in the fire category, I believe there's two ways to attack this. Our first way is you cannot learn football by watching football. What I mean by that is you cannot learn how to play in the NFL watching people play in the NFL. It doesn't work. Otherwise, there'd be a ton more people in the NFL. Like, it just doesn't, it does not work. You cannot get ready to play in the NFL by watching people play in the NFL. And my second school of thought is it depends on what that player has shown you. So if you get a situation where, like, your Caleb Williams, and it's out there playing to see, or Jaden Daniels, and it's out there playing to see, yeah, okay, you absolutely make that move, and you make them QB1. Drake May is a little less playing to see. However, it is close between him and Jacoby Brissett, which is why I was saying you should go with Drake May. Again, if it's close, go with the more athletically gifted younger player. Both of those things are Drake May over a Jacoby Brissett. No disrespect to Jacoby Brissett. He is and will continue to serve a very valuable point for us. I am simply saying that at time being, he is not the best option for us because it is close between May. Now, if Brissett was out there throwing 70%, and May was throwing 50 and 52%, and, you know, May's had 4 or 5 picks and Brissett's had 2 or 3 touchdowns, no picks. Okay, that's a different conversation. But considering their numbers are fairly similar, I would go with Drake May to be QB1 because you get to find out relatively quickly, do you have anything or is this fool's gold? If it's fool's gold, you'll be able to pivot quickly. If you got something, you're able to then immediately begin to build around him and not waste valuable rookie contractual years. All right, so let's talk about it. Tua Tagovailoa, the recently paid gentleman, he was talking on a podcast or radio interview or something about Brian Flores. And basically, he pulled the Brian, Coach Flo was too hard on me. He tore me down. He didn't build me up. Some of the difference between Coach Flo and Mike Vrabel. Okay. Brian Flores, obviously, is a no-nonsense defensive style head coach. So, if you are the quarterback for said coach, perfection is not even mandatory. It's like, it's expected. You are to be perfect or very excellent playing quarterback for an old school defensive head coach because your whole job is to not put his defense in a bad spot. There's nothing that a defensive coach wants, hates more than when he looks up and sees 14 points and 10 of them are from either a turnover touchdown and then a really short field goal. He hates that because he looks at it, he's has to take up for points that he didn't even have to, he has to account for points that wasn't his. So, a Tua Tagovailoa who was a little turnover happy, who did have some injury issues, that is something that he would want to correct immediately. I'm totally with Coach Flo here. If you're a hard coach, you're a hard coach. Like, he did not have the, the couth and the understanding that quarterbacks are 99% of the time a little different than everybody else. But I definitely agree with him because Tua Tagovailoa played like dog crap on the blind forwards. Like, it wasn't like he was lighting the world on fire. He played like crap under Brian Flores. So I totally understand what Brian Flores was saying, what he said. Basically saying, like, dude, you're killing me and that you're not good right now. You need to get this ish together. But I mean, I'm just not a fan of talking about your previous head coaches, regardless of the situation. I'm not a fan of that. So hopefully Tua doesn't get any sideways with any players in there. I'm just not a fan of that, especially if and when they play you and they're in your conference. So I'm just not, again, not a big fan of that at all. All right, so the Steelers offense, I can't confirm this. I cannot confirm about the Steelers offense. I am 95% sure they've never left the bus yet. I mean, they are absolutely putrid. They're bad. Like, they're really bad. Like, they are downright awful. Like, regardless of anything that's going on, regardless of trying to figure out a quarterback situation, how many starters played, none of that, they looked bad. This is a scenario where it's closely bad. Go with the bet. Because in the event where it still starts off slow, it's much easier to me to justify going from vet to youth than going from youth to vet. Because you can go from vet to youth and there's a path back for the vet in the event that the youth doesn't work out. You know, the path back. If you go from youth to vet, it's over for the youth. So I think you start Russell Wilson early. I think you allow him to get through the first 4 to 6 weeks. And if you look up and you're 3-3 and you got a putrid offense, make the switch. If you look up and you're 5-1 and you're humming a little bit, don't make the switch. If you look up and you're 1-5 and you ain't humming at all, definitely make the switch. Because you have to think about, is Fields the long-term solution? If that's the case, you have to almost treat this like your first year with him on his rookie contract. You got 4 years. You got to accumulate talent. You got to accumulate operations. You got to accumulate a lot of different things in order to be ready to go at the tip top of the NFL from the door. And the Steelers don't have a lot of good stuff. So that is something to definitely look over if you're the GM. All right, so the New Orleans Saints actually looked alive. Like, they looked like they could be something. Now, it's taken them a few drives to get in the end zone, but Derek Carr, Alvin Kamara, Chris Olave, and the rest of that crew look like they are figuring life out to an extent, which is a positive in New Orleans. We know their defense is going to be real. We know their defense is in New Orleans, in the words of Stephen A. Smith. You know New Orleans is going to have a top 12 ranked defense. Like, you just know that, right? And so when you get a situation like the Saints being able to score points offensively, that's going to be major for them this season, as they are able to now lean on that defense a little more. But that defense, now I can take a little gamble. You know, if I get popped on this big run because I took a bad rush angle trying to gamble and we're still up 14-7, I'm not getting super nervous about anything. Like, and it's so advantageous to have that, as opposed, you know, so as opposed to the Saints of a couple years prior was, man, we're in a shootout. I hope we can match. A lot of times we didn't. And so that is, you know, what's going on with the Saints. Keeping an eye on the Alvin Kamara contract extension situation. So far, it is quiet on the Western front. A couple of quick hitters. Gardner Minshew is officially QB1 with the Las Vegas Raiders. Tua Tagovailoa went 5-5 with a touchdown in his last preseason game. Chiefs really did look good, but they didn't score any of the Mahomes drives. All his drives are field goals. They ended up booting one in after Coach left. But that is the gist on the Chiefs offense. And then the preseason in general. And after it's going to go to college football. We don't have a preseason. But the preseason in general has been a snooze fest. And the reason why is, I grew up in an era pre-joint practice being a thing for real. So when you wanted to practice with somebody on another team, you either had to go to them, they had to come to you, yeah, I met a neutral site, whatever. And so those practices were usually closed-off practices where, you know, it was 1v1s and you would see each other in the game. Well, now they have established such a high level of joint practice culture that now those coaches that are famous for playing starters don't do it. Because you are unable to get the maximum effort out of guys that were by getting hurt. Now, in practice, they're just running on emotion usually anyway. And so, it'll be perfectly okay if, you know, those guys didn't play in the game and they did the joint practice. And joint practice is killing the preseason game because now that last joint practice is effectively the walkthrough that everybody used to get out of the preseason. But up next, we're going to talk about college football, what's going down as we barrel towards week zero. Welcome back into the show. And now we are going to discuss the college football. It is back. College football is back, baby. It's been so long. Like, college football is one of those sports that genuinely feels like it takes forever. Like, it feels like it takes so long for college football to come back. And yet, we've made it. We have made it. God dang it, we have made it. Week zero, as it is called now. Week zero is Saturday. It is headlined, of course, by Florida State and Georgia Tech. If you're looking for the betting odds on that game, Florida State's 11-point favorite. The over-under is at 55.5. Georgia Tech is money line plus 360. With a, according to ESPN, matchup predictor, a 79.7% chance of Florida State winning. This game will be in Aviva Stadium, which I'm not sure where that, I think that's in London or England. I'm going to look now, but Aviva Stadium is the host site of the game. And we'll do a big, it's in Ireland. Yeah, it's the game in Ireland. So we'll do a big coverage, of course, of week one. Whenever it's coming out, we'll talk about our big games. We've got Colorado, North Dakota State. We have LSU, USC. We have like four ranked games coming in week one. Like I said, and always, we have our week zero, Florida State, Georgia Tech. So a lot of different excitement this year. I mean, if you look at the college football landscape, there's a lot of things happening. You've got the arrival of Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC. This is the first time they've ever been in the SEC. So we have the arrival of those two coming in. We have the first time we don't have divisions in our conferences. And I was talking to one guy earlier. He was like, yeah, LSU's going to finish third in the West. And I was like, there is no East-West. Like, you know, and it's kind of like it's the first time in history. So we can see rematches in the conference championship game. Like, for instance, let's just say, I think, of course, LSU are going to play. So let's say LSU and Bama play. LSU wins. LSU's in Atlanta. They're the undefeated team. Alabama's a one-loss team. Nobody else has more than one loss. Nobody else has one loss or fewer. LSU and Bama would play again for the conference championship game. Now, this was previously impossible because of divisions. And I think what divisions did was it was helping travel. It's sort of like what I think about the NFL. And there's no reason why the NFL, or the NBA rather, should have conferences. I kind of get it with the NFL. Other than the NFL, I prefer divisions. Like, I don't understand why, because the NFL, you don't play everybody, right? Like, you just don't play everybody. Like, you play 17 games, it's 32 teams. So there's 14 teams a year you don't play. And if you do the double division games, there's like, you know, 17 teams a year you don't play. So I'm perfectly fine with there being sort of division system in the NFL. I don't think you need AFC, NFC. I think you could just do like everybody groups in their divisions. And then you kind of just randomize what divisions you play. I think that'd be pretty cool as far as scheduling would be concerned. But like in college football, there's a bunch of protected rivalries and stuff like that. So people got rid of the divisions and they're not making it too complicated. Like the Big Ten don't have divisions. No one has divisions really. And they say in order to might not make things too complicated. But like I said, they have those protected rivalries. So like LSU's going to play Alabama. Oklahoma's going to play Texas. Georgia's going to play Florida. Try to think of another one. I think Florida has another one with somebody else. But, like, if Florida and LSU is a pretty traditional opponent, Mississippi State is going to play Ole Miss. Auburn's going to play Alabama. Like, certain LSU is going to play Arkansas. Certain things is going to happen just purely because of that's the way it is, and they're called protected rivalries. Regardless of what's going to happen, the NCAA and these conferences were going to ensure certain games got played. It did not matter. And so that's what kind of where we are right now. But I kind of enjoy the no division system. You get your protected rivals every year. Like LSU's going to get Arkansas. Probably Florida gets back on the schedule, and then Alabama every single year. And then from that point, it kind of randomizes from the rest. Like to me, Texas should get Oklahoma, of course, Texas Tech, and potentially Bama every single year. And kind of little protected rivalries. And then with the new 12-team playoff, you could suffer. And deal with it early. You could suffer losses as long as you get to the conference championship game. And that's why I think I love conference championship games. You could suffer a loss early, two losses in conference early, barrel your way through, get to the conference championship game, win your conference championship game, and get to the college football playoff as one of the 12 best teams. And then you're automatically reseeded as one of the top five seeds. So you have an advantage there. It's going to be very interesting to see how this season shakes out. I think Colorado's going to be one of our bigger storylines, especially early. I think if they come out and they beat North Dakota State, they go 4-0. 5-0, you're going to see them ranked in the top 15 probably, and then there's going to be a lot of pressure on them at that point. I'm going to see a lot of the celebrity come back, a lot of the star power, a lot of the stuff, so on and so forth that they were surrounded with last season. You're going to get a lot of that back if they come out hot. LSU's got a situation that, you know, this is the first time. And the Brian Kelly experiment isn't done at LSU by any means. But this is the first time truly where he carries a little bit of the expectations. Okay, this is all your staff. These are all your guys. There's no holdovers. You've brought guys back. Like, he sent away Corey Raymond and Blake Baker. He's brought both of those guys back in-house. OC is DC and then cornerback coach. So that's one of the lead recruiters. He's brought back Frank Wilson. He's done a lot. He's brought Danbro Davis. He's done a lot of things that has been designed to be really, really good for LSU. You've got Kalen DeBoer coming after Nick Saban, the absolute legend, the man with a statue outside. And it ain't like Nick Saban retired from the building. He has an office upstairs. Like, it's pretty insane. You have Mario Cristobal, you know, at Miami, trying to get that shit together with the defensive coordinator Lance Guidry. Shout out coach, who I worked under. You have Dan Lanning, who's talked a lot of junk about Colorado and others. Now he goes into the Big Ten. You've got Lincoln Riley in USC entering the Big Ten. You've got Stanford in the ACC. So you have so many different storylines spread out throughout the country in terms of how this thing could be attacked, how this thing could be set up. It's going to be very interesting to watch and to see. On Front Street, I'm going to say I'm my national champion right now. I don't have one. It's tempting to say Georgia. It really is. The champion last year was kind of out of nowhere. It was Michigan. It's tempting to say Georgia. So I'm going to go there. Screw it. I'm an LSU fan. I'm going to go LSU. It's going to win Natty. Let's screw it, right? Another big storyline I want to keep an eye on is Ohio State. They hired the heir apparent to Ryan Day, which was Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly was the head coach at UCLA. He voluntarily goes to be the offensive coordinator at Ohio State, conveniently when Ryan Day, the current head coach of Ohio State, is having problems, and potentially on the hot seat. He's holding that. He is having issues with his defense, and yet he brings in an offensive coordinator. Okay, I think Chip Kelly is going to be there. I think Chip Kelly is the coach in waiting at Ohio State, unofficially, officially. If Ryan Day were to get fired, Chip Kelly steps up and takes over. That's what I think the situation is at Ohio State. So very interesting, very entertaining situation. I'm excited to look at this season, excited to watch this season. I'm glad college football is back. But up next, we're going to have our best for last, which is going to be a talk about Noah Lyles and Tyreek Hill. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to have our best for last, which is going to be a talk about this beef between Noah Lyles and Tyreek Hill. So if you guys don't know who Noah Lyles is, he recently became the fastest man in the world. That title is bestowed to whoever wins the 100-meter dash at the Olympics. It's just the way it is. Like, I don't make the rules. I don't care that he won by the hair on his chest. Like, I don't care. I know that is the rule. The fastest man on the planet is decided at the Olympics in the 100-meter dash. Conversely, same thing with the women. The fastest woman in the world is the young lady from St. Lucia. I can't think of her name. My apologies. But she is the fastest woman in the world. She won the 100-meter dash at the Olympics. That's just the way it is, right? So Noah Lyles is the fastest man in the world, right? He's also probably one of the most least likable athletes ever. That little Negro is annoying. Like, he is just naturally annoying. Like, and it's purposeful. Like, he does, like, there was a report came out that he skipped Anthony Edwards' shoe release, saying, like, what does Anthony Edwards want? He's never been a world champion, blah, 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 blah. He's also the same person that said that the NBA should not call themselves world champions because they're not competing against the world. Then he started talking about the NFL players, how they, you know what I'm saying? It was just like, he's basically hating on every other sport but his. And it's almost like he wanted to play other sports and just couldn't. He was a really tall, fast dude. And so a tall, really fast dude. And so that's where they put him as a niche. He couldn't be a basketball player. He couldn't be a football player. So now he just slanders those sports. And so it's just annoying. He's annoying. But anyway, he got the attention of Tyreek Hill. And Tyreek Hill shot back at him with a few things. And then ultimately said he'd smoke him. Noah Lyles, I think through his agent, maybe directly, said basically Noah's not going to respond. However, if Tyreek wants to race, set it up and they'll race. Okay. Otherwise, stop talking. Okay. Noah Lyles is annoying 99.99% of the time. He's right in this case. He's right in this case. If your thing is I can beat him in a race, race him. If you're not going to race him, don't talk about it. Like, Tyreek Hill, when he was, like, in the 16, 17 years old, was, like, one of the fastest men in the world. He was, like, top 7 or 8 fastest Americans, for sure, like, in the world, in the country. And so, but now, I know DK Metcalf tried to go for a trial. I think Tyreek Hill tried to run another time. It was, like, way slower than his old time. Mainly because he's not training for track anymore. He's training for football. His body's different. His age is different. His physical pounding is different than it was in his track prime. It's just a different level of punishment. And so when you have a guy like Noah Lyles who's saying set it up and we'll run, Tyreek Hill, you either have to run him or shut up about it. There's no other alternative. You've called him out. You said you'll beat him. You either have to run against him or you have to be quiet until you either run against him or you never talk about him specifically in that vein ever again. You call him a hater, call him what you want. But when you start saying things like, I could beat him in a race, you either got to race him or you got to stop talking about it. So in this case, Noah Lyles is right. In the other cases, he's an annoying prick and I wish he would stop talking. But that is all we have for the day. This is your host, Justin Jackson. Remember, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just in Time Sports Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow the social media handle at JTime Sports. I repeat, at JTime Sports, for all of your breaking news and updates. Now, as always, don't forget to have a great rest of your day. This is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out.